Dreamers. The Dreamers and Kenzie.
So this is a classic cult TV.
Not like this.
We watched cult TV from 20 years ago and before, so you don't have to. Today we're here with Cass.
Hey.
Cassandra. Angus.
Hello.
Baylor. Mackenzie. What are they doing?
What are you doing, Kenz?
Being cool.
This is all in mime, folks.
Yep.
They're playing charades.
Lisa's whispering into Mackenzie's ear, beam me up, Scotty.
She doesn't hear it. She's like, what? What? She said it.
Just say,
beam me up, Scotty.
Thank you.
You're right, Lisa.
You know what I'm going to say.
What are you going to say?
Con!
Wrong episode.
Con!
Con.
Okay.
Star Trekking.
Hey!
Always going forward. I'm Justin, and this is Cop TV Club, and we're watching Star Trek, the original series.
We are?
Yes, apparently so. Yeah. And what episode are we watching?
Okay, so this is a redemption episode of Star Trek because Angus and I weren't here. And from what,
everybody hated it.
Yes, yeah, from what I understand, everybody hated
it. Guest podcast in Jerry, who gave us a bit of history of the show because she's a very avid sci-fi fan, but it would be nice to have Baylor and Angus with us to do it
with us. Yeah. So today we're watching The Balance of Terror, which is Season 1, Episode 14. I'm not going to go into the episode at all. I'm actually going to talk about... One, the director, interestingly enough. His name is Vincent McEvee. He directed things like The Untouchables, Gunsmoke, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was great.
Yep.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yep. The 1914 Wonder Woman movie.
The what? The 1914?
Wonder 14 Wonder Woman movie.
Mm-hmm. 1914?
Yep.
No.
Wonder Woman.
2014? No.
It's set in
1940. It's set in 1940. Oh, the original Wonder Woman movie. Like the one that came out years ago,
Yeah. I was very confused. I'm like, that can't be right.
Sorry. I only talk about the director because I think you guys talked about the writer last time. So
the
director's actually a pretty big guy.
Yeah. What was the last episode we watched? City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Harlan Ellison. Ellison.
Yeah.
He was an award-winning author.
So Star Trek was originally based off The Voyage of the Space Beagle by A.E. Vanguard, Forbidden Planet, Rocky Jones, Space Ranger, C.S. Foster's Horatian Hornblower, I think I wrote
Horatio.
Here. Horatio, that's it. Thank you. And Gene Roddenberry wrote a lot of westerns back in the day. And so he characterized Star Trek to be the first, or his first draft, as wagon train to the stars.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like cowboys in space sort of thing, because that's what he was more familiar with.
Yeah.
I think that was the show's logline as well.
What was kind of pushed forward initially. But it was otherwise rejected in Desilu.
Which is Lucille Ball and... that was their studio.
Yeah, except when they broke up, she bought him out and she became president. Everybody on the board was like, we don't like this Star Trek idea. And she was like, no, I love the Star Trek idea, actually. So she was a big reason as to why it was picked up.
She was a pioneer in comedy, but she was actually a very shrewd businesswoman.
Mm.
And because of, I guess, what she'd built with the TV show, it gave her clout and she made decisions like Star Trek.
Yeah. Mm.
There's a lot to thank her for.
It's actually really interesting because women in Star Trek, like, not on screen. I mean, on screen, obviously, but also behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There were a lot of women that actually pioneered this show as well and did really big things. Like, Brooke Breton was the producer of the movies 4, 5, and 6, and she was the first official female producer with that title, apparently. And you've got Jerry Taylor, who co-created the Voyager series.
And she also did a lot in the Next Gen and things like that.
She was the producer of Season 4 of TNG and the reason for Troy and Crusher getting into the captain's chair.
Nice.
Yeah, so she was a big push for females, which is absolutely fantastic.
Didn't they have a really... I'm trying to think. There was a female writer that was really present during the TNG series as well. That wasn't Jerry Taylor, was it? No.
No. Oh, no, same woman, probably, behind the creation of Voyager and Captain Janeway, which did actually get a lot of hate mail initially, but we're not here to talk about Janeway. We're here to talk about the original series.
Mm-hmm. Again, I've said it every time we mention Star Trek, Janeway... badass.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So good.
100%.
Yeah. I really
the decisions
character.
That other characters, other male captains, would kind of agonize over, she just went,
She was
absolutely fantastic. And she's a good example of a female character who was decidedly female from the get-go and is really strong and prominent. As opposed to Ripley, who was written as a male character, and then they just cast a woman instead. Don't get me wrong, Rip's got her own following of people and stuff, and 100% amazing, but Janeway was awesome from the get-go.
And there's a lot of people that complain about, oh, the character's written inconsistently. I've heard that complaint in person. Mm-hmm. And
I think with any series, this is true of Doctor Who or Babylon 5, where you've got different writers writing different episodes.
There's always going to be a bit of inconsistency.
Yeah. That's because it's written by different people.
So saying Janeway particularly, it's one of the problems with her character, is it's just a load of nonsense.
The female I was thinking of was DC Fontana.
That's right. Oh, yeah, DC Fontana was the first woman to have credit for all associate producers for 22 series and 12 episodes on TNG as well.
Yeah.
I do have her here, I just didn't...
So, I was mixing her up, because I see Jerry Taylor's name come up a lot well. So,
The biggest feedback that a lot of people tend to give about the original series as well is that it's very misogynistic, and Kirk's very misogynistic, which I think is not at all accurate. It's definitely more of a bromance between Kirk and Spock.
Yes, that's definitely where the bromance is.
Yeah. One time, Kirk was getting a massage from a woman on deck who was giving him a massage, and he thought that it was Spock giving him the massage. And he's like, wow, Spock, you're doing a great job. And then when he turned around and was like, oh, thank you very much, Ensign, and was very uncomfortable. Like, his reactions or his interactions with women is not like, hey, let's smash. And I think that there are definitely a couple of moments that give into maybe a little bit of that. He's hypersexual, like with the whole kissing of Uhura when it should have been Spock, not Kirk, but...
I definitely think there's good political reasons for them to have made that switch, though. Everyone acts like it was Shatner saying, oh, I want to be the one to make history by being a white person kissing a black woman on TV for the first time. But it was just a better situation to have the human captain as opposed to the alien who is other.
So it made a bolder statement. Different.
It made a bolder statement.
Yep. And going, because she's kissing the alien, it's fine. Yeah.
Whereas kissing the captain, the highest ranking person, the person in the position of authority and leadership, it brings that act to a completely new level of visibility that was undermined by people going, oh, Shatner just wanted to be the one to break history sort thing. And yeah.
Shatner himself is character. But he is absolutely fantastic, I think, in the original series. In fact, the whole cast and crew are. And they stand, even after this, on their own as pinnacles for the entertainment industry. And for science as well. I mean, if you look at... I keep on forgetting a name, but...
Nichelle Nichols.
Yep. First black woman in space. She actually went to space, so she would also be counted as the first...
Star Trek actor to enter space.
Yes.
But she spent a couple of weeks up on the ISS or something like that.
Yeah, tracking Mars.
Yep.
Yeah, she was doing actual science, NASA.
She was encouraged to take the role by Martin Luther King.
She was already in the role.
Yeah, she was going to step away.
She was going to quit, and she had a chat with
Martin Luther King, who was like, oh my God, what you're doing is absolutely fantastic.
It's inspiring people.
Yeah. And then comes along
Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg.
I was about to say that,
Who only applied because Nichelle was in space. And so it's like, I need to keep this alive. I need black women to be in space.
Well, it was rumours or whatever that she was trying to lobby to get a role on the show. And they were like going, why would she want to be on the show? She's just won an Oscar for Ghost. Why would she want to be on our little TV show? And it was she loved the show because of what Nichelle Nichols mm-hmm. did on it.
Nichelle Nichols also went on to work in recruitment and promoting STEM programs for NASA in America.
For women of colour to join NASA and become astronauts themselves.
And there was a side character in
TNG.
The Next Generation show, who was a black woman just kind of in the background. They
the astronaut, lines, yes.
But they're an actual astronaut that was brought into NASA by Nichelle Nichols and then
got a role on the show as a cameo.
You've got Sulu as well. George Takei, who is an avid speaker for the LGBTQIA plus community, along with an amazing voice actor who shows up in all of the most random shows, like Adventure Time, for example.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. But yeah, you've just got people kind of everywhere. But Star Trek has spawned a lot of off-series as well, if you think about Galaxy Quest.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Reacted to that several years ago. That was
Galaxy
Quest, it's great.
The guys that write the Cornetto series, Simon Pegg, I believe it is, absolutely loves Star Trek.
To the point where he wrote one of them.
He wrote the third movie.
And it was an amazing movie. I mean, no one can really deny that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people
I was going to say, a lot of people but I actually didn't mind it. We'd left so long to go and see it that we had to go to Marion because it was the last place in the state that was still showing it. But it was we went on a date night and it was so good.
I think I was sad that they destroyed the Enterprise. I was like, no, I don't like it when they do that in the old movies either.
Yeah.
The Enterprise is so iconic that destroying it just seems like a taboo thing. Like, it should be the thing that you're not allowed to do.
Yeah. But they all do it. They do it so often. I know. Yes. The point where it should have should be desensitized by now.
Yeah.
But it's still so heartbreaking to see.
It's abhorrent.
So my background with Star Trek was the movies. The only episode of Star Trek that I've actually properly watched the whole way through was the first time we did Star Trek for this show.
Yeah.
I had it in my queue forever.
More representative because the first one involves going back to Earth. Yeah, spends most of its time on Earth.
And also, as a history nerd, I'm like, this is wrong. This is like how it's supposed to happen. I put it aside and just focus on I've forgotten the character's name. I've forgotten the woman's name. Just focusing on her being in soft focus and
having to die. Is it Joan Collins or something? Joan Collins was like the...
That is one thing they do a lot with female characters is they smudge the lens so that the lighting just bounces off them.
Yeah. There are definitely a lot of kitsch moments. Yeah. And, like, I started watching the original series a couple of years ago and binge watched. I'm not even all the way through the first season. I think I'm just getting to the end of it now. Angus has been
What's this?
Star Trek.
The original series.
And I've had it in my queue since we've had Netflix, which has been donkers years now, and I still haven't sat down and watched it.
I watched a bit more because I decided the other day, I'm going to watch through it all, but kind of weaned off of it. Not weaned off of it, but stopped watching it. And I'm up to season two, I think.
Yeah, there's a chunky amount of stuff in there.
Yeah, but it's realizing how much of it, like, there is the fact that this is made in the 60s, and so the way we were saying before about how it's banned and misogynistic, there's a lot of awkwardness in terms of the way they present women because it's made in the 60s.
Yeah.
Like how progressive it is in a lot of areas. Like say, the fact that it's a multiracial crew and the fact that it's not brought attention to as though, hey, look, we have a black man in the cast.
And you kind of go, 30 years later, people were still doing that in movies and TV shows.
See natural as anything, even to the point where, say, Uhura's from Africa, nobody casts African characters in sci-fi films. And so, like, the past decade or so.
Yeah.
They were African Americans, but not Africans.
I think the worst character for misogynism and just downright ick is Bones. I genuinely hate Bones as a character.
Bones is very...
Is in like Bones from... Yes. I thought you were talking about the TV show.
No.
Oh, yeah. But I think he's supposed to be that kind of abrasive...
But he's a doctor, but he's got like the... Hello, ladies. How you doing? Don't worry, I'll help this lovely lady.
He's got the racism for Spock and the misogyny. It's just, he's a very uncomfortable character.
I don't think he was made to be loved, though. I think he was made to make the other ones more loved.
Potentially.
He was meant to be the back-in-my-day
character.
Yes. He very much was that. He had the outdated views. He felt outdated and old.
Yeah.
The way his character is portrayed is as the crusty old white guy.
Yes. Basically. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is, again, 60 years ago, they knew the crusty old white guy was a problematic individual.
Yeah.
And he's always the one that brings up the wrong counterpoints, as in, who tries to sort of provide opposition to their modern thinking.
And you need that clash, because I think if you don't show that wrong viewpoint, you can't highlight that these guys do the good thing.
This is supposed to be a utopian society, so it's like having backwards thinkers to showcase that utopian society is
and
so strong.
Advancement
and also, Mike, pretty just the wrong word, but just if everybody was living in utopia, it's like, oh, we're living in utopia, yay, it would seem fake to the point where you're watching a series of My Little Pony or Care Bears or something. That's a world where nothing bad happens and when everybody likes it, and it would just seem so fake.
I don't know if they did it so much in the original series, but they definitely started doing in TNG, was pointing out the corruption and how riddled it is within Starfleet. I really like that side of thing. I would love to see more in regards to it. Get ready to drink, because Star Wars Andor started doing that sort of thing, and now I realize that I'd actually like to see that in the Star Trek universe
more
as well.
Political.
It's like more
rather than worm parasites or something.
Don't get me wrong, I love the idea of worm parasites. That's such a sci-fi ridiculous thing to me, but
the human nature behind corruption and
how, like, even when we get to that perfect society, there's always going to be that inherent need for greed that humans have.
And Picard season one had a character that was the Starfleet admiral that was corrupt and evil, but it turns out they were just evil and they were a Romulan alien and they kind of ruined the
and that's such a simple cop-out. If you look at all the old written stuff, it's like, oh, this evil person is Chinese. Obviously, they're pretending to be a white person, but they're actually Chinese.
And because a lot of it is tied into racial hatred, biases, propaganda historically.
And it'd be nice to see that the aliens aren't the bad guys, but the humans are. That would be nice.
And not pushing evil into the role of the other.
Yeah.
But it was initially like that Western in space. So it was your white hat, black hat. Bad guy is bad to the bone. And the white guy is pure as the driven snow. Yes. And, you know, it's...
That's how it was originally written. And now...
It's evolved.
Going forward and evolving,
Ultimately, at the end of the day as well, it was they needed to create something that people would watch to be able to get the next season approved to go ahead, you know. It was, and those old as time tropes were really, we see so beyond them now and we see them as cliche, but that ultimately that's what people would sit down and watch.
Well, I mean, we see them as cliche now, but they still work as a trope. It just needs to be spruced up a little bit.
It's more nuanced.
It needs more depth to it now. Instead of just having it as a one-tier cake, we need, like, 7 tiers.
Yeah.
Like, let's go deep with this.
Yeah. One thing I like about this show, is that the villains are still kind of humanized.
Yeah.
We'll see a bit of it in this episode, but there's another episode where Klingons have taken over this planet filled with peaceful people, and Spock and Kirk are trapped on the planet and they're trying to help break people free and trying to help the planet resist the Klingons. And the Klingon officer in charge of it all is very brutal. He's like, for every Klingon that's killed, I'm going to execute 100 of your people. Like, all those typical tropes. But they sit down with Kirk to interrogate Kirk sort of thing. Kirk's expecting to be tortured. And the Klingon's like, right, I'll pour you some tea. There's no reason we can't be civil about this.
We're two generals sitting down at a,
You're well-respected, you're a legend sort of thing, even known to us because of the Enterprise flagship. I'd love to get to know you. Like, who are you? And they really humanize the character, even though he's a brutal individual and he's evil. They still show him as being human. He's not a monster. He's not...
Well, he can be both.
I think it's also one way in which I look at the series, it feels as though each alien race fits a certain stereotype. And I think part of the issue is making sure that that's not, oh, we're bringing in the friendly character because we want a really character. I need to make sure that we're not just doing the same thing we're doing, like, oh, this person's Chinese, therefore Chinese stereotypes out the wazoo.
Mm.
And we're not just turning it into space racism.
This is the kind of thing that they did do a little bit with Star Trek, though.
Yeah.
They did, because the Klingons are Mexicans in this.
In season one, they have Mexican actors for the most part playing the roles.
It's
because
all
of
banditos.
They want the slightly darker skin. They've got a bit of the Asian slanty eyes. Because they're trying to also tie them into Mongolia, like Genghis Khan, the Mongolian gods and stuff.
Yeah, the warrior people, yes.
Yeah. And so it's...
It's this mix.
This mix. They seem like there's...
They're not fully fleshed out?
Yeah, and it feels like the Klingons are vilified because of certain racial biases that exist, and
whereas now Klingons are written to be a lot more than that.
Yes.
And have a lot more to them.
Yeah. In fact, then it would be...
Wolf was one of the best characters in Next Gen. He was one of my favourite characters.
Yes.
Do you know why Wolf was one of the better characters?
No.
It's because he was experiencing the Klingon world through the eyes of human.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. because he grew up as a human,
mm-hmm.
so he was trying to be a Klingon, and so it was pushing stereotyped Klingon traditions and stuff onto Worf to try and bring that in that he just wasn't understanding of. And I was reading this entire article about how Worf was not a Klingon. He was a human trying to embrace a different world.
Trying to connect to his heritage and his...
Which is nice.
Past,
But I'm just going to move on a little bit. It was originally suggested by Justin that we watch Khan episode.
The Khan episode.
Yeah. And while I really did enjoy the episode, I'm entirely against it because I feel like the Khan storyline has been overused.
Only by me?
No. Not only by you, but it's constantly reused. And if in Picard in season two...
This is the thing.
I
haven't
got through season two yet.
Khan is not even overused as a villain. He's overused as a MacGuffin.
Yes!
That's
yes!
Yes!
And so he's... The weight of who he is has been diluted. Because in the episode, he's very brutal. He's very strong. I love some of the way they show his strength. Some of it's a bit silly where he'll meditate like he's... activating his muscles before doing something strong, but the way they display his strength, it leaves you going, oh, okay, this individual's ridiculous. He'll do the two-hand punch that they make fun of in Lower Decks, but when he does it, you're like, okay, sure, that's, he's strong, got it. The way they do it still feels serious. It's not something you particularly look at and go, that is so dumb, even though it is.
I need to ask, so there's very few episodes that I'm actually aware of. So there's an episode where Khan's introduced.
Yes.
There's a Tribble episode that I know of, the Tribbles.
That has Klingons as well, and that has the Klingons that are less Next Generation Klingons, that are original series Klingons.
And the Tribble episode, I've watched that crossover on Deep Space Nine, so I know enough about it, but not enough to actually watch the episode and know what's going on. And the parallel universe one where they've all got the little goatee beards.
Yes.
That is my and then we watched that episode, which we watched a few years ago, which had nothing to do with any of those and was completely out of left field. So are we watching one of those episodes?
No.
Ah!
There's also the classic Gorn episode.
That music constantly, and it's
oh, that's
so
not just
jarring.
The one episode, or is it just...
No, that episode has that music constantly, and it's so jarring, because they'll put it in random moments where the Gorn is slowly walking in their giant plasticine costume sort thing.
The
whole thing looks like paper mache.
But that episode of the Gorn is really interesting because it's about an omnipotent species that basically goes, you're not advanced enough. You are too interested in fighting each other to advance any further in space.
Yeah.
And so they push the Gorn and the humans back. Which is very interesting as a thing, because it was supposed to be like showcase this evil race and kind of put restrictions on as far as they're allowed to explore.
And I think because in Star Trek, the humans saw themselves as being very evolutionarily superior.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've done all this and we're so far and we're not primitive. And so, to have another species going, no, you need to take a few steps
back. I mean, we were primitive to the Vulcans. When Zefram Cochrane had created his shuttle and did his little warp test flight. Mm-hmm. And then the Vulcans came down and were like, oh my God, you're amazing. But that itself was like, they would have just flown past and not cared otherwise. So,
and also, I was going to mention the fact that there's a lot of super omnipotent or hugely powerful species in the very first couple of seasons of Hollywood, at least what I've seen so far.
So we're not watching the Gorn episode, are we?
No.
This is another one again.
Yes.
So do you want to give any information about what episode we're watching, or do we just go straight into it?
So this episode contains one of the bigger Star Trek villains that the Federation encounters. I mean, they appear in Picard season one.
I was just thinking, you've watched Strange New Worlds.
Not all of them.
Oh, you know the final episode of season one? Where
season two?
Season two, where Pike's doing his thing. And the point of the episode was, if Pike was in the same position, it would go terribly. And because that's basically what happened in this episode.
I think that's end of season two. It'll make more sense when you watch it.
I'm sure I'll turn around during the episode and go,
I think the episode showcases why Kirk is genuinely a better bridge commander than Pike, even though Pike is absolutely fantastic.
He's, oh my God.
So pretty.
I feel like I've spent the last couple of years trying to convince Adrian to have the same hairstyle as Pike.
And the same voice.
Would you be interested?
He's got that grey daddy look with the sweeper.
I'll go with the Khan look. From this episode. So not from the movie, episode.
From the movie.
With the shirt unbuttoned down to here.
That's
and
why
the
he wears all of his flowy.
And the fake muscles in the front.
They weren't real?
No, they were plastic.
Ricardo Montalban, what are you doing?
Well, it was a different actor, wasn't it? The movie. It was the same actor.
Same actor, yeah.
Oh my God, they look so radically different. Hairstyle, attire, everything.
For the record, it wasn't an entirely different actor when they did the revamp.
Benedict Cumberbatch, and they weren't the one who did it in the TV show.
I never
would have known that.
Thanks
for saying that.
You're welcome.
Really opening my eyes to things.
So you've got to watch both, because you get to hear him scream Khan as his ship is falling apart.
I haven't seen the movie. I've seen clips.
I've not seen any original movies at all. I've only seen the new Next Generation movies.
I saw Generations, which is
I watched that in the cinema.
Search for Spock.
Search for Spock.
Search for Spock.
Oh, that's the worst.
Not a good one.
It's a comedy episode.
Yeah.
And as we can all tell, Jeanette is so excited for this because she has stayed so silent. Her and Mackenzie are on the same plane as not interested.
Yeah. I think it would be fascinating to watch, almost do a spin-off and hate watch. Both hate watch and enjoy watch all of the different movies.
We can do that like one a year and just do it next
year. Do a Star Trek movie marathon.
SBS2 at one stage years ago when she was young was doing marathons where it would do like two movies each night or something, or one movie each night, and I got really invested. And then it'd get to the stage where I'd be like, I'm supposed to go to sleep and I have to stay up and wait until this movie ends.
So how did everyone else get introduced to Star Trek?
I
was Voyager kid growing up. One of these things is, the video store we had in Newry had entire shelves of just obvious single sci-fi series, so every so often we'd go in and buy a tape, because Channel 9 bought the rights to Star Trek and only showed them at the most ridiculous hours of the night. But yeah, so I grew up watching Voyager, so I'm kind of, it's like different Wagon Train to the Stars style, but there's a lot of weird stuff from there that I'm nostalgic for. I'm a bit later than Next Generation. I've only really watched the original series now. It's like in the past few years.
So have I, like.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of bad stuff about it, and initially I was on board with hating it like everybody else, but then watching it, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, especially some of the episodes, not just because of the fact that it's progressive in a lot of ways, especially even today, but also the fact that there's a lot of stories there which work really well and are told really well. yeah, so I'm not surprised that it still hasn't aged terribly. It's a few bits where it's like, oh, this is made in 1967. Okay. But a lot of it is still quite enjoyable, worthy. And
I used to watch it on Channel 9.
At ungodly hours, apparently.
No. It was late, but it wasn't.
Was this original series?
Original series, of course, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was in black and white.
Oh my God.
That's how big green old armchairs.
Jeanette?
I first watched it after living with Justin, and he was watching it, and I get to watch the odd episode. So, yeah.
I don't think I ever watched the original series with you about.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
So, what are you expecting from this? Are you expecting to walk away saying it's absolute garbage again?
No. Okay. I don't hate Star Trek. It just didn't catch me.
Because you're not a most of the week kind of person, are you?
No. And it's mainly
you don't like a utopian society either, do you?
I'm a little bit cynical, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Utopia. This is the problem. The original one really did depict a utopian environment, and it would bring in rudiments of old Earth, so of old periods like that, bring in a merchant, a space merchant, who was basically a mercenary, and he was a disreputable character, and he was a depiction of everything that's wrong with current society.
Harry Mudd.
And Harry Mudd. Yes. That's the first episode of season 2, I think.
Season 1, first episode of season 2. Yeah. First episode of season 2 was really freaking weird.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, this is the bit where they're captured by some alien race, and they're basically... No. They're captured by robots. I forget the details, but at some point they're basically acting like complete idiots so that the robots... had their programming
broken.
Because they're acting so weird and so contradictory and illogical. It's the most ridiculous scene in the freaking...
And then they leave Mud behind on the planet to be tortured by two robots who are identical to his ex-wife.
Lisa, how about you?
I was introduced through the movies. The movies, I think, were pretty much my era in the 80s and then the 90s. And then, obviously, then in the late 80s, Next Gen came out, and I remember watching that. I was more into that than anyone in my house. Mm. But even as a kid, it was always like someone would get a nice new chair, swivel chair, and it wasn't like a nice chair, it was Captain Kirk's chair. You know, it was like, there was always this running, you know, you just learn stuff about it through osmosis because everyone has to talk about it. We recorded an answering machine message. This is showing my age.
Yeah.
So we used to record these goofy answering machine messages, and one of them was, I was pretending I was Uhura, with the theme song for Star Trek in the background, and it was, we can't reach them on the scanner, but if you leave your name and number, we'll get back to you. And it was just, I would have been Mackenzie's age. I would have been like somewhere between 10 and 12, I reckon. So it was always around. And then when Next Gen came in, I started to really get into that, even though I was probably a bit young. Because, I would have been probably about 10 when it came out in Australia. And then Voyager, I probably got into. I was a little bit more age appropriate for it. But then, other than knowing the cliches and the characters, I've not really watched it. I knew the characters through the movies, but not through the original TV show.
So, Kenzie, are you interested in watching Star Trek? That's okay. What do you expect Star Trek is? Just from everything that we've talked about.
Probably like these aliens on a ship going to different planets.
Yeah. And you think that's going to be bad?
And I know a bit of it. The red ones always die.
Red
shirts.
Beautiful. Yeah.
That's the one thing you have to know.
If they introduce a character early on in the show that is wearing a red shirt, you know they're going to if they give them a background and he's a little known character.
That's something. Oh, yeah, this is the episode we're watching where we get to see the death of... Spoiler.
You know who they are because they have the red shirt. There's a really cool song by Jonathan Coulton called Red Shirt, and it's about this guy who's basically out alone, dying, and then looks down at his red shirt. It's actually a really beautiful song from the point of view of a red shirt. Yeah.
Angus, how about you? Because
I got introduced to Star Trek through the movies. But not the old ones. The Chris Pine movie.
Oh, no!
Yeah. That was my first introduction to Star Trek, was Chris Pine and then Into Darkness. But after year 12, so like 2013, 2014...
I thought with your pedigree you would have got into it at a younger age.
Nope. We just never had it.
I'm guessing because Voyager ended in like 02. How old would you have been then?
Like seven.
Yeah, too young for that.
I remember seeing a couple of odd names of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was on Channel 9 really late, but like, basically when you're
they repeated and repeated and repeated.
Yeah. But we never watched it because we just were doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chris Pine was my introduction to it. Then I played the MMO, Star Trek Online.
Okay.
What's an MMO?
Massively multiplayer online role-playing game. So an MMORPG. Star Trek Online, where you've got your own ship and you're flying around and visiting planets and beating up aliens like the Borg and the Romulans and the Klingons and the Cardassians and all the typical villains in the show. But it's set in the original timeline, so not the Chris Pine timeline, but it tries to connect them all. And from that,
like in a multiverse way.
Yeah. And from that kind of setting of the universe and from that world building that was in the MMO, I was like, this is actually interesting. I'm enjoying this. So I started watching some of the original series from there, got about halfway through season two, and I think I fell off and stopped. Continued playing the game for a bit, and then years down the line, like 5 years down the line, I ended up dating Baylor, and Baylor's like, Star Trek is brilliant. So we watched Next Gen together, then we watched Voyager together. I watched some of the original movies, and
Got Baylor onto Star Wars.
I got Baylor onto Star Wars. They got me onto Star Trek.
Marriage made in heaven.
Yes. Yeah. I had a Star Trek computer game in the 90s as well.
Yeah. I used to play the role-playing game.
Oh, wow!
The tabletop role-playing game.
Oh.
And this game, say you're in a battle, every player had a role, so they had the engineering panel, the community comms panel, the science panel, and the captain sort of, and it's the big screen at the front. You're supposed to have magnetic tiles and put things on a hex map and things like that. And you play out the battle like that as a group against the GM. I played the captain in one of them. But the way to win in this was you end up in this firefight with these aliens and things. The only way to win is to put down your weapons and put your universal translator.
Diplomacy!
We come in peace. We walk towards them. Hands in the air. Going, I'm willing to sacrifice my life to,
it's all about the moral victory.
And that was the game. Yeah. The game was just full of that.
Main characters couldn't die at that point. It was before Next Generation had Tarsha
Yar. Yes.
So there I am role playing this character going, I put down all my weapons and I put my universal translator on and I give up. It's just the total opposite of anything every other role playing game.
And the GM was probably like,
Yes!
Oh, they would have been happy. Yeah.
The cornier, the better.
Yeah!
Yes, of course, total corniness.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, should we get on it?
Yeah, we should get on it.
Let's get on it.
Times are wasting.
So, Jeanette, what did you think of that?
It was okay. I mean, it was watchable. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. Better than the episode we watched before.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was a much better, just very straightforward story, really. It was, kept me interested.
No, I thought it was excellently intense. I thought it was actually quite good.
Yes, it was.
That sort of focused battle of minds, essentially the search for the sub.
Hunt for Red October.
Know
nothing about that movie.
Hunting
for a submarine.
It's hunting for a submarine, and the submarine thinks it's got the upper hand until it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the film noir style that it's shot in with the lighting specifically over the eyes, that's very characteristic of this director, because it's all the way throughout The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And stuff, which is cool.
It is kind of weird growing up on Voyager and stuff, swapping back to such a melodramatic lighting system and acting style. So, like, it's a really good story and it's really well told. It's just the fact that, say, it's thrown to the fact that, suddenly Yeoman's behind him and they're embracing, is a bit of a culture shock when I first looked at it.
Yeah.
Because of the 60s versus 80s and 90s. Yeah. And how we prefer realism in the characterizations and acting instead of the over-the-top dramatic. sort of styles that they had all the way through the episode.
Yeah.
Can I just say, though, you mentioned Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I haven't watched a lot of it, but it was a show that my dad used to talk about a lot when I was a kid. It's like the American version of Bond, isn't it, Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Yeah, it's a movie.
It was a movie, but it was originally a TV series.
It was originally a TV series.
Yeah, in like the 60s or something.
Yeah, it was basically a spy organisation.
Yeah. And I think it has two of the best character names of all time. Was it Napoleon Solo and Ilya Kuryakin?
Something like that.
Though, mind you, they did Strange New Worlds. And I think that it's very indicative of how much Uhura has changed as a character, because she would be the codebreaker if that, instead of Spock, because she's a polyglot.
Yeah.
And so she does a lot of the code breaking in Strange New Worlds, whereas now she's more of like almost a non-entity.
Yeah.
She's just that person of colour.
Mm-hmm. Added to the navigation, because usually she's just on comms, which kind of always feels like a bit of a background.
She's a receptionist.
Yeah, basically.
I really like what they did with Enterprise, and when they kind of tried to retrofit that role, they got someone who was like a xenolinguist that could speak all of these languages before the universal translator, and you kind of go, this is what Uhura was, and it's validated her role than being more than just a receptionist.
There are some episodes where she's doing a lot more than this, but because the major role is just communications, we just oversimplify things.
The joke in Galaxy Quest, which I just reinterpret what the computer says. It's a little bit playing on the fact that in this series they didn't give
a strong role.
The Romulans in this is also very coded to be Russians, I think.
Like that real Hunt for Red October.
Actually, the Roman...
So that's what I thought. However, it's playing on the Cold War.
It's going from the homeland
to the motherland.
Yes.
And then they use comrades quite a lot as well. So I was thinking Romans afterwards, but definitely
definitely stylistically Roman. Functionally.
Russian.
Cold War Russia.
Yeah, definitely.
I gotta say, I was very underwhelmed. But that's because I really don't get into those Hunt for the Sub type episodes. Not my thing. And I think that's probably why. Like, look, the episode we watched last time was very cheesy, but I probably like... I'm not saying I preferred that episode, but, that kind of battle, ship battle, that kind of plays into that whole kind of ship porn type of thing, where I'm not interested in strategic tactical manoeuvres. I think I got more interested in the conversation that they had for 2 minutes right at the end of the episode than I did all the way through it. So,
what Cass was saying as well earlier is that they redid this episode in Strange New Worlds, except it's Pike versus the Romulans, and so it goes through how Pike failed in what he was doing as opposed to how Kirk was able to succeed. Pike tries to go for a more diplomatic stance, and it shows that that's not a possibility, which is very interesting, and it's able to showcase how Kirk is currently trash at everything that he does in Strange New Worlds, but it showcases him beginning to make his growth and stuff, which is really nice.
Because Kirk serves under Pike for a while.
He learns off of Pike. At the moment in Strange New Worlds, he's very underdeveloped, very flat, kind of doesn't go anywhere. But the last couple of episodes, he was actually very interesting, and he started to feel more like Kirk. And then apparently in this next season, the final season that is coming out, he's going to feel even more like Kirk. So it's showing a growth in character. I love character growth in shows.
And I think that's really clever as well, because I think if they had too much Kirk, then people would want to long for the traditional characters. But to have him kind of just in the background, it allows the current reiteration of the characters and who they are through Strange New Worlds, not as a reboot of original Star Trek.
Sorry, it's very easy to ruin it, because if you make the characterization too overt, then it's a distraction from the rest of the series. But it's too different from the proper Kirk from the original series, and people are going to say, they ruined the storyline again, and get upset.
Yeah, I think when I first came across the revamp of Kirk, I was very against it, because I was like, he's not getting what Kirk is about. even Chris Pine did an amazing job at portraying Kirk.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
He was great.
Mm-hmm. No, this person that is portraying Kirk is like, I'm showing him from this point of view because he's underdeveloped. He hasn't cooked yet. He's not ready.
Mm.
And so it's kind of showing him in that more straight-laced type instead of going, oh, yeah, he was always a bad boy. Yeah. I kind of hated that. Mm. I like that he grew into this rule breaker over time after seeing the rules that he could break and needed to be broken.
Mm.
And I think that's what Pike is able to show, is that we can bend these rules and we can snap these rules and it's still going to be okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm. I thought it was really good myself, but, you know, it's a different perspective, I suppose.
And I think that's something that Star Trek's always been good at, is the different types of episodes to be able to appeal. You know, Doctor Who does the same thing where there'll always be these certain types of episodes and, you know, there's certain episodes that, they don't do much for me, but I know these other group of people love them. Yes.
I didn't want to bring an overly kitsch kind of show as to what everybody expects Star Trek to be. I actually wanted to bring something that was a little bit more than the sum of its parts, really. I wanted to showcase what I find interesting about the show and how it is a more serious show about
how it can be different.
Yes, and it's very dry, and how it's written to be as progressive as possible. Like the keep your bigotries in your room, just leave that at the door, please. Like, I liked that. And I really like that kind of showcase of them moving forward and being open-minded. Like, okay, we've just seen a Romulan for the first time, and Kirk isn't going, oh my God, they look just like Spock. Clearly Spock's a bad guy too. Instead, it's, okay, this is different. I'm going to need more information. And it's not a shoot from the hip, which everyone seems to say that's what Star Trek can be about. Well, at least original series, it's like shoot from the hip, raunchy, that sort of thing. Instead, it's more like, let's...
It's not. What do we do? All opinions are valid here. What should we do? Yeah, I like that.
It's not as cowboys in space as... as necessarily,
Gene Roddenberry actually described. I would describe it a bit more like, in a way, Britain trying to go through and colonize, but instead of colonizing, they're just helping other worlds.
Yeah.
So not like Britain at all, but yeah.
Which I guess that comes into that Horatio Hornblower, which was that real kind of, was it Victorian era, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the good guys going out helping people. We're not colonizing them.
We're liberating them, you know.
But it's that done to an actual good extent. It's,
And the fact that Starfleet trusts Kirk to a point that they'll go, look, this is a really tense situation. We don't want it to go more forward. And they played that up so much in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then Starfleet was like, look, we trust you. Just you do what you think is...
We'll back you up with whatever you decide. I love that right at the end. It's like, command have come back. They're happy to just support you. And it's like, I'm glad because...
But I really like that as they just trust that what he's going to do is going to be the best benefit and outcome for everyone, even though it was just playing this war game. Like, he could have reignited the war from this act quite easily. Like, a destroyed ship, and there's definitely going to be Starfleet signatures from their weapons and stuff still lingering in space by the time the Romulans go and check it out. But they're like, yeah, that's fine. We'll see what happens. Yeah, you don't get that. I don't think even Picard would get that kind of leeway or support.
No, exactly.
Whereas Kirk does. Janeway wouldn't, but Janeway would just do it.
Well, Janeway's in the middle of space with no communication with Starfleet, so she doesn't have a choice.
What food, Angus?
Oh, God.
There was no food in this episode.
No, there was no food at all.
Do they have reason?
They do, yes. Yeah, in fact, there's more than one episode where they use food as a weapon. There's one episode where they... aliens that haven't had physical bodies and have given away all sensation and stuff, they trick the aliens by literally just serving them up food, and so they're eating this, it looks like Play-Doh, like foam Play-Doh, brightly coloured on a plate, and they're wolfing it down, and it's like, what even is that? And it's you know, just strange space replicator food. Space food.
Yes, sort of that's thing. What I assume. That have food replicators.
That, that's what they actually touch on in TNG and Strange New Worlds and stuff, is that cooking becomes a skill that you want to do.
Yes.
Because the replicators are absolutely shocking. Yeah, they're able to replicate, like, nachos or eggs and bacon, but when you get proper food,
it's proper ingredient.
And you cook it from scratch, there's definitely a different change. And so Pike using that to be able to...
That's his bonding thing, isn't it? He invites people around and he cooks for them, doesn't he?
But that's also the way that he's gotten himself out of problems with, wasn't it like Klingons or something? He got captured, and so he was cooking food for these space pirates. But I really like that.
Yeah.
I guess in a military sense, you're eating food from like a mess hall, or like if you're working somewhere and you don't have access to your own kitchen and things like that, and that food wears thin and it becomes tasteless and repetitive.
It's a way
so
to destroy morale for something.
Yes.
I was having a discussion ages ago about how if a replicator is exactly the same every single time, and therefore real food made by cooked by a real person is going to taste differently because it's not going to be perfect every single time. And the psychology behind that.
100%.
And
seasoning. I have to try and find that article. Taste.
Kenzie, what did you not think about this show? What did you think about the show?
What did I think about the show?
Yeah. I know you didn't like it. That's why I said not think, because I was expecting you to say I loved it. It's okay.
We want honesty.
Drag it through
the
mud. I want to know what your opinion is.
Will you silently hate watching it from a corner? Yeah.
What did you think of Captain Kirk and Spock?
So I don't even know who they are.
Captain Kirk's the guy in the yellow shirt.
Spock was the man in the blue with the ears.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy.
No opinions.
So,
so what's your thoughts about sci-fi anyway? Is there any sci-fi shows or movies in that that you like?
Doctor Who.
I haven't
Doctor Who.
Have you given Prodigy a watch? Star Trek Prodigy, have you given that a watch?
I've tried to. I've wanted to get her onto it. It's turning into just physically forcing her to watch it and get through a few episodes and then she gets onto something. So, at the moment, it's there's a few things that we're getting into. But, yeah, I don't know. For someone whose parents are both sci-fi fans, she's not kind of really into sci-fi. It's disappointing. But that's okay. She can have her own taste of things. So,
meanwhile, I'm a massive sci-fi nut. At this point, I'm just falling further down the rabbit hole. Started off as Star Wars Babylon 5, and then,
I used to be like that with comedy, and it was my parents would introduce me to all these different comedy shows, and then I hit a certain age, probably not much older than she was, and I'd be like going, oh, you guys need to watch this. It was more my dad. It was like, you need to watch this. Or I'd be watching something in another room, and because I'm a loud laugher, I'd be laughing, and then dad would come in and go, what are you watching? Like, can I watch that too? And there's so many shows and comedy things that I've introduced to him over the years that it was kind of like a cyclical thing, which is kind of cool. I'm waiting for that, but I don't think that's going to happen with her. We'll
see. Not with YouTube. It's going to be more difficult because a lot of content is easily accessible just on YouTube and headphones. Mackenzie will be laughing in another room and you'll just go, oh, she's watching something on her iPad or on her phone with earphones. Like, there's no way for me to particularly engage with that. And you may ask them later, but you also just won't remember because you would have seen 20 episodes from, like, 20 different things on YouTube. A whole bunch of shorts.
So, Star Trek.
Food.
Oh, good lord. I don't know. This is like a... I don't know. I like.
Something
I do like Star Trek. I found this quite riveting. 50s? I don't know 50s food. Who do you think I am?
Cool, like those old school space bars. Space snacks.
Yeah, it would have to be something like moon pies or whatever they're called.
Astronaut food.
Yeah, astronaut food. But no, I think it would be some sort of biscuit for me. Because I'd sit down. I mean, I've sat down and watched like 30 episodes of
custard biscuits with hundreds and thousands.
No.
Okay.
The jam?
Yeah.
The Monte Carlos?
Oh, Monte Carlos, yeah. I like them. They're classic. They're good.
Okay. Yeah. You can have it. A Monte Carlo it is then.
Monte Carlo biscuits.
I don't really like them, so that works.
I'll sit down and eat a packet of them in one sitting. They're great.
I think that... No, did they do that on the original? They do it in the movies, some weird coloured... wine.
Romulan ale.
Romulan ale.
Yeah. Those are the Romulans.
So. Yeah, there you go.
Green Romulan ale.
Okay.
Everyone says that it's green, but it definitely looks more blue.
It definitely
looks. Well, I was going to say it's blue wine or something, isn't it? Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking of Saurian brandy.
No, it looks green. Everyone says it's green. It's actually a quote from Lower Decks.
Sorry, we're going to fight over this.
I guess we'll say goodbye. So, thanks very much for watching and or listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
I've been doing that. We'll be right back.